Welcome to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. I'm Natasha Moore. At the junctions where Christianity and Aboriginal culture intersect over the course of Australian history, you'll find stories of tragedy and sorrow and pain.
And I don't know if people understand what losing everything is, but this is generations of trauma and trying to survive life in your own home.
This is Larissa Minicon, a Kabi Kabi woman and a Torres Strait Islander. Her last name may sound familiar to you. Her father, Ray Minicon, is a prominent Aboriginal Christian leader and a third generation Pentecostal pastor.
We deeply believe in the message. We deeply believe in Jesus. And I think because of that, you know, we've survived all the atrocities that's been thrown to us. And I'm not saying that we stop fighting for our recognition or our treaty or our sovereignty. It's just that, you know, being a Christian helps us to survive and give grace to a lot of people and also hope, you know, all those beautiful messages, you know, that Jesus brought. That's what we truly believe, and it comes natural to us because when we look back in our culture, we actually have a lot of that already embedded within us as our identity.
Larissa leads Common Grace's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Justice Team, which includes Tanya Riches, she's completing a PhD on Aboriginal Pentecostalism, and Shane Fenwick, a theology student who grew up in Sydney's northern suburbs, but now calls the Yarrabah Aboriginal community in North Queensland his second home. We asked the team to share their experiences of the fractures and wounds in the relationship between Aboriginal culture and the Christian faith.
The word mission is something that is really connected with Aboriginal history now. There's not a nation on the Australian continent that didn't receive missionaries. Some of those missionaries were very compassionate people and had, you know, relationship with the people that they were bringing the gospel to. But the wider project was really colonization. And so you have an engagement between peoples of different cultures that is already kind of written before you get there.
I can only speak from my experience in Yarrabah. It was a mission set up quite a little while ago and was essentially a dumping ground for people from all different mobs and countries. They were put into the mission and told that they couldn't practice culture, they couldn't speak language and this type of thing. So in my relationship with Uncle David, for example, he speaks of a lot of the elders who would carry on language, but for most of the Yidinji people, they lost the ability to speak language and practice culture because they were in the missions. And I know for him, all of the Yidinji people and the other mobs that are there, that's such a huge loss. We can't underestimate the kind of trauma that's caused.
Alongside this darker narrative, there are also stories of life, renewal and hope. Shane first visited the Yarrabah community when he was 16. It was a trip organised by his school. But he's gone back every year since then.
So I got given the name Buruju, which in Yidinji means paddy melon. So a paddy melon is a really short, kind of small kangaroo which hops around. And his rationale for giving me that was that apparently I hop around all around the place, from Sydney to Cairns and all around the community. So he gave me that, which is funny, but like a real privilege and a real honour.
His friendship with Uncle David and his connection with the Yarrabah community are examples of healing and reconciliation that he wants to see more of between Aboriginal and non-Indigenous people.
For there to actually be true reconciliation and justice coming out of that, there needs to be a space for genuine, loving relationships to be formed, for there to be friendship. And I think the church is one of the most kind of optimal places for that to happen as a people of a story which is based around reconciliation and reconciliation with us, with one another and with God. And so being a people of all colours and tribes and tongues connected by the life, death and resurrection of Jesus, I think that is powerful. And once we understand that connection that we have and build on that friendship, then we can start to see some of the outworkings in terms of justice and peace and treaty and all those things. But it starts from a place of friendship.
Larissa agrees. Reconciliation is all about relationship.
In the history, we didn't create relationships, but now we have the opportunity to create relationships. Reconciliation is whether you will walk this walk with me and go through the fire with me, whether you can help me with my burden as I help you with yours.
National Reconciliation Week is another example of one of the more positive interactions between Christianity and Aboriginal people. Its focus, improving relationships between Aboriginal and non-Indigenous communities for the benefit of all Australians.
National Reconciliation Week was an initiative of Christians that had been meeting to pray about reconciliation and about justice for pathways forward, for justice, for peace and for ways in which things could be made better.
This is Grant Paulson. He's an Aboriginal man. He's from the Birra and Bundjalung people. He's the son of a Baptist minister, a trained clergyman, and a faith and development advisor for World Vision Australia. I think a lot of people would be surprised by the connection there with the churches. I think that's probably not well known to everybody that that's the origin of this. Obviously, there's a really complex history between kind of Christianity and the church and Aboriginal communities and peoples. Thinking a bit about that history, can you tell us a bit about, maybe starting with the negatives first, when that relationship has been kind of a destructive one?
Sure. Look, it's a common practice that the church was often used as part of the colonial process to soften up the natives. Certainly, one of the papal decisions that came out, a papal bull called the Doctrine of Discovery, and where the Pope actually gave imprimatur to extend the kingdom of God in that way over the rights of Indigenous peoples. And although our history in terms of Australia was a Protestant colonisation, sort of the die had already been cast in Catholicism, and it was part of the colonising process where it's understood you send in the missionaries first, placate the natives, and then we can begin trade, and then we can begin settling into a new land and making a new home in a new country. So that's a global phenomena. And certainly in Australia, we have aspects of that.
I think we all have this sense that obviously terrible things have been done and over a very long period. And often we don't really know much about the specifics of that. Are there particular episodes or mistakes that you think the churches particularly should be ashamed of?
Well, there are certainly many churches that have apologised and issued apologies for their participation in the removal of children. Certainly churches that have apologised for being part of a colonial process that have had people being marginalised rather than being seen as the created in the fullness of God. Certainly institutional abuse, where churches have apologised for that, and that's more a denominational aspect. And some churches have also, where things like the Hamitic curse was preached and taught, where we were descendants of Ham, and therefore as descendants of one of Moses' sons, Ham, the darker race, we're therefore to be slaves of everyone else of lighter skin. And that had been taught in some theological institutions in Australia up until the 70s. There are those churches that have apologised and communities that have apologised for that and since moved on from that that understanding.
Because presumably, I mean, that interpretation with the son of Noah and so on is one particular aspect of the Bible that was used in a really destructive way. But there have also been resources within the Bible and the Christian faith that have been used to combat the oppression and mistreatment of Aboriginal people, aren't there?
Oh, look, certainly. I think around these times of history, sometimes people look at these points of history and make the presumption and assumption that everybody of Christian heritage had the same view at that same time, and that's simply not true. The fact that we actually have the kinds of populations today were in part the result of people of God writing to the king and queen at that time, you know, petitioning the government and the monarchy against the culling of Aborigines in Australia. You also had, you know, people who were like John Saunders, Richard Johnson, Anglican minister who was around the time of William Wilberforce and John Newton, who had a strong sense of justice when he came to be a minister here in Australia, to the extent where he was actually part of his ministry were caring for an Aboriginal girl who didn't have a family and was brought up in family. So they had a strong connection, and he's preaching and teaching on justice and love around the right treatment of Aboriginal peoples were part of that Anglican movement. And John Saunders, the first Baptist minister, was always preaching on, you know, thinking rightly and acting justly towards Aboriginal peoples, and took a strong prophetic role in early Sydney communities at the time.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. If you've just joined us, we've been talking with Grant Paulson on reconciliation between Aboriginal and non-Indigenous Australians. Grant, you've described the differences between mainstream and Aboriginal Australian culture in terms of a sacred secular paradigm. What does that mean?
It means that there's an acknowledgement that everything has been created by a high being, and that there's a relationship, and that we are all sacred creations of a creator spirit, that we are not products of our own thinking and our own making, but we're all part of a bigger network of relationships that belong to each other and that are responsible and accountable to each other.
Obviously, this is a vast question and it's hard to generalise, but how would you characterise the relationship between Aboriginal communities and the Christian churches today?
The census says that up to 70% of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples have a Christian heritage. Now, of course, it's hard to measure what that actually means in lived practice. Mob might say, well, that's the mob we hung out with when we filled out the census because they had a good feed on the other night. But everywhere you go in our communities, there's an Aboriginal church. Now, some might say that's the last vestige of mission mentality. Other people might argue, and myself included, that these are people who have found something transforming in the message of Jesus and have sought to live that out in ways that are meaningful and are real in the world today.
Many people still think of Christianity as a kind of Western religion, even though it started, obviously, in the Middle East, and more people in non-Western countries are Christians today than in Western ones. What are some of the unique qualities of Aboriginal Christianity, the ways that it's been embraced within the Aboriginal community?
I find the fingerprints of God's grace and insight in our culture when we think about the way things are all connected. There's no secular, there's no sacred, we're all held as one. And the God who created the universe is the God that calls us into deep communion with himself, but seeks to right all relationships, not just between us and himself. But that particular passage in Colossians where you have this image of a holistic reconciliation where all things are reconciled unto Christ. And I like that image from an Aboriginal perspective because the place in which we encounter God is not just through the text, but also through creation. And all of these things are brought back into right relationships through him. And I guess that sense of connectedness to God, to the creation of the world in which he's given us to steward, like he did back in Genesis, that all things can be put back into right relationships, not only the relationships with humanity to God, but humanity to each other, humanity to creation, and the right stewardship and relationships that we're supposed to have.
To close our episode today, we have a very special treat. This is Grant Paulson singing See the World Through My Eyes.
See the world through my eyes. See the world through my eyes. Sometimes my world can be lonely. Sacred and secret place stretching back thousands of years. It's a place I call my own. it's a place I call my home. Waves of oppression sweep over me. An outcast in my own home, where is my resting place? I yearn to be recognized, yearn to be understood. So I take my stand, have my say. Yes, to be true to my Maori way. Dare to see the world through my eyes. Dare to see. Dare to enter in to the life of someone that you think you know, 'cause you might be surprised when you see the world through my eyes. Ingrained and deep, there's so much to offer, there is so much to share. Here lies an asset, not a liability. So please open up your mind just to see the world through my eyes. Dare to see the world through my eyes. Dare to see the world outside your reality. Dare to enter in to the life of someone.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. I'm Natasha Moore. I hope you enjoyed this episode on reconciliation and Aboriginal spirituality. For more conversations like this, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Just type Centre for Public Christianity in the search box to find us. Next week, Simon Smart's interview with Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Marilyn Robinson. You won't want to miss it.